Good afternoon and welcome to this afternoon's teleconference called How to Create an Entrepreneurial Legacy. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call today. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Roger Hamilton. But before I do that, I just wanted to give you a quick rundown on how today's call will run. Basically, we'll be on the call for around about an hour. And over the course of that hour, I will be asking Roger various questions on the whole entrepreneurial process. Now, some of the questions will be my own questions, but the vast majority have been inspired by the questions that actually came through the website when people were signing up for the call. Now, this is an international call. Roger himself is actually calling in from Bali, but we have people tuning in from all over the world. So wherever you are in the world, I'd just like to bid you a very nice welcome today. Now, I first came across Roger around about a year and a half ago through my connection with a friend of mine, Daniel Priestley, who was on our call last week. And Daniel suggested that I have a look at one of Roger's profiling tests called Wealth Dynamics. And I'm someone who's fascinated by the whole psychometric process. And to find one that was so targeted on entrepreneurship was quite exciting for me. So I immediately went home and actually did the test and found it to be incredibly illuminating for me, and I've been using the principles from that test ever since. And Roger's created that test and has had an incredible impact on entrepreneurs all over the world. Now, Roger is also a best-selling author of a couple of books. One is called Wink and the other one is Your Life, Your Legacy. And he has businesses in publishing, property, event management, training and franchising. So without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call Roger Hamilton. How are you doing there, Roger?
I'm doing very well, Damien. Thanks very much for inviting me.
It's great to have you on the call. Now, I'm just going to actually just kick you off from the very beginning, Roger, and just ask you, what exactly is an entrepreneurial legacy, or how does someone actually go about creating an entrepreneurial legacy?
Sure. Okay. I'm going to do this. I'm going to say that given that I'm phoning in from Bali and we've seen today our phone lines drop in and out, if I suddenly disappear, not because a coconut hit me on the head, it's because I've fallen off the call. So just keep talking to yourself and I'll be back again in a minute.
Sure, no problem.
That's the first thing. Second thing I want to say as well, and this is kind of interesting because over the years, I'm sure I'm like you, you know, we invest a lot of time in learning and so on. And one thing that happens once in a while is we get onto a conference call, we take the time to like listen in to what other people are saying. And I know there's going to be listeners today, either the first time or regular listeners to your calls who call in. And I just want to say this, it's really easy to listen to a call almost like watching a chat show, which means you're kind of like there and you're like working on your computer or you're like, you know, just like, you know, eating dinner and you're listening at the same time. And what's coming in is coming in like 10%. So what I'd like to recommend is instead of doing that, I personally believe that an hour of time for you, Damien, for me, and for each person who's currently listening is so valuable, and we often forget that. And I just want to have a bit of a wake-up call for anyone listening right now. You know, you put this time into being on this call. There's a reason you did it, because you obviously wanted to know about wealth. So make the most of it. Engage your brain. Get a piece of paper. Get a pen. And make sure that out of some of the things that we talk about over this hour, you actually write notes and then use this so that by the time you get off this call, you know you've actually got not just some learning, you've got some actions as well. So I'm just saying that because I'll kind of stretch out my answer to my first couple of questions with you a little bit. So anyone who has to go off and get a pen and paper can go do that and come back again, because I think we can get some really good stuff from the questions you told me about. But I'll say that fundamentally, as far as an entrepreneurial legacy goes, we are talking about the fact that everyone who's ever made $1 billion never went out to make $1 billion. In fact, even people gone out and created the lifestyle they wanted and how they wanted it, they very rarely started by just saying, I'm just going to go get that lifestyle, because there's very few people who will help you just get the lifestyle you want just because you want it. There's many people who will be happy for you to have the lifestyle you want if you're adding enough value to them and to the market that as a result of that, whatever dollars they're paying gladly. So the fundamental key to an entrepreneur legacy is that you are creating something which is beyond yourself. It's lasting for longer than you in terms of time, also in terms of space.
Excellent. I think that's really valuable advice, and certainly all the entrepreneurs that I've met that are really passionate about their businesses, not just about the money, there's something else that's driving them there.
It's the most important thing, because there's going to be times when, especially as the waves get bigger, which they always do as you're out on your own doing your own thing, and you've got more people relying on you and more things going on, you're always going to have the times that you have bigger highs, but you're also going to have bigger lows as well. And if you're out just for the money, when the bigger lows happen, you'll just quit and go on to something else anyway.
Yeah, that's great advice. Now, I was just wondering, Roger, how did you actually get started on your entrepreneurial path?
Almost totally by accident. I actually was studying architecture in Cambridge when I started my first business, and at that point it was because I had the opportunity to stay for a couple of weeks in Cambridge and be on the rowing camp that was going on at the time, and I simply had no money and I had to find a way to be able to earn some money. So I found a way that I could start a business and get some money in, and that helped me to get on the camp and also at the same time to go on holiday. So for me it was almost by necessity that I started.
And what was that first business that you started there?
Oh, I had a lot of my friends who had their parents living in England, so they had contacts to go have summer jobs and so on. And my parents live in Hong Kong, so they didn't have any contacts in England to help me out. So it was pretty much up to me. And so I figured, well, I don't have an awful lot to go on here, basically, other than the fact that I'm a kind of mediocre artist in my architecture and the fact that I happen to be in Cambridge. I don't have a lot more going for me. So I thought, well, I'll just use that then. So I basically got out on the street and I put some big signs up which said genuine architecture student from Cambridge, and drawings of King's College Chapel and St. John's Chapel, set myself up a stand, and I went out and I drew each day and added to my portfolio each day, and people came by, they just bought my drawings from me, and that's pretty much what took me to my first business, which was when a shopkeeper on the other side of the road came over and said, I really like your drawings, could you draw one for my shop? And I realized that these retailers had more money than the tourists. So I figured, wow, if he's interested in that, there's bound to be other people interested as well. So I created a map of Cambridge where I had all these different retailers advertise their businesses on their rooftops. And within 3 years, I had 40 cities around the UK with similar maps and advertisers all around England and Scotland and Ireland who were working with us in our business.
Brilliant. That's very good. Now, Roger, there's going to be a variety of people on the call with a whole range of different experience levels with the entrepreneurial path. And I'm very aware that there may be people on the call that are literally just starting out as well with their businesses. So I suppose with that energy and that enterprising nature that you actually created these drawings for your first business, I was just wondering if there are any key tips you can give for someone who's just starting out.
Yeah, I would say that the first tip is many people have an idea for a business or a product, and they figure that that's a good enough place to start. And the honest answer is it's not. It's not who has the best idea or who has the best service or who has the best value. It's fundamentally who's got something which is at the right value and at the right price point, that the price exceeds the value and as a result people buy it. And that obviously sounds so obvious, but it's not, because so many people I know, they come along and say, wow, I've got this great idea and it's fantastic. And I say, well, how many people have bought it so far? And they go, well, none yet, because I'm still working on the idea. And I say, well, then it's not even a great idea. Until you've got people actually saying they're going to buy it, then you're probably already doing the wrong thing. So every one of the businesses that I've seen that's been successful starting from scratch has always started with an entrepreneur who's had an idea and then said, right, before I put any more effort from this idea in actually creating it or producing it or spending money on it, I'm going to go out there and meet people who might want to buy my idea or buy my product and say, at this price, would you be willing to buy it? And actually get them to sign up a letter of intent to say, yes, at that, if you were at that price for that product, I'd buy 1,000 of them or I'd buy 100 of them. And if you can't find people who are willing to do that just off your idea and what you say about it, you're probably on the wrong thing already. So there's a really big difference between having all the effort and energy going into producing something and actually putting your energy, first of all, into ensuring you've got something which is commercial. And it doesn't take anything more than time to take your idea and go to the people that you think are the right ones who are going to be taking it on and actually working with them. And if you can't find the people who are your potential customers, go to the people who are going to be your suppliers. Go to the printer who's going to print the magazine you're going to produce, or go to the production artist who's going to create the movies you're going to make, and say to them, are you willing to put your time and effort into this over the next 6 months so that I can get your time for free or I can get your credit in order to do this? And if those guys who are already in the industry say, no, I wouldn't be interested in doing that, then again, that's a pretty good clue that you're on the wrong track. So again, it's simply about making sure to begin with you're creating something called flow. And flow, to me, is the basis of all of wealth.
Great. We'll talk about entrepreneurial flow in just a little a moment from now, Roger, but I wanted to dig a little further here as well. And like one concept, I guess it is with regards to flow that people may be interested in tapping into, is that there are businesses out there that are already in that space of flow. And I guess in terms of testing out your ideas with these different businesses, how long would you actually give yourself before you would determine whether a business has legs or not?
Are you saying in terms of whether someone wants to take a business on as a license or
yeah,
a franchise
like,
or a partnership?
Say for a startup entrepreneur, how much time would you invest thinking and working out whether an idea has legs or not?
No more. What, you mean in terms of as an investor, or you mean someone who wants to actually start a business?
Just for someone who's got an idea.
Most investors make their decision on whether they want to invest or not within 5 minutes. Most business owners who are good at what they do will make a decision whether or not they should be running that business or not within the day. And the reason for that is because they know who they're going to call to find out whether there's a market for it. They know what they're going to analyze to make sure that there is an investment which is worth investing in. And if you're spending any more than a day with no cash flow coming in, you're already doing the wrong thing.
Okay, that's really good advice.
I mean, and by the way, I know when I say that, there is a majority of people that I meet the first time they come along to one of the events we run, or the first time that they actually meet with one of our consultants, or the first time they come along and read the magazine, and the majority, they've never been told that. They've never been told it's like when you're a student at school and someone says, how do I know if I'm going to pass the exam or not? And it's like, if you can't look through the paper within 5 minutes and look at those questions and know if you can answer them or not, then within that first 5 minutes, you're going to know if you're going to pass it or not already. Then you get on with actually doing it. And for too many people, they just go from first question to second question, knowing there's no way they can pass it anyway. I mean, this is the same with entrepreneurship. It's for too many people, without knowing what you're analyzing, you can spend years wasting your time and at the end of it not have the money and also have lost your time as well.
Yeah, totally endorse that. And I think Daniel shared an idea on the call last week where he said with any business idea, he always has the three phone call test where he'll come up with a concept and then literally think about the three people he can contact to actually get that idea into action, and uses that as a springboard. So I think like to have an idea and to give it a 24 hours of solid investment of thought time, and just to work out in that space of time whether it's got any go in it or not, definitely will save you a lot of time as an entrepreneur.
Which is that when you actually contact the people who are in the know and you give them half an idea, the good chance is they're going to come back and say, well, that idea I'm not so sure about, but actually if you did this with it or that with it, then that would definitely be a lot more commercial. You actually refine your idea just by making those calls in the first place.
Yeah, great. Now, we mentioned flow a couple of minutes ago, and I was just wondering if you could give people an introduction to entrepreneurial flow, particularly for those who aren't familiar with the wealth dynamics concept.
The easiest way to explain flow, and in China they talk about the Tao, which is your way, which is your personal flow. It's the way which is your path of least resistance. And if you think of flow as a river, most people, they either are working on digging a hole where there's no water coming in, or they're digging a very small stream and hoping that it's going to grow in some way, where pretty much all the most successful entrepreneurs I've met, what they do is they'll go out and look for someone who's already got huge flow, you know, like a Niagara Falls of flow or a Mississippi of flow, like something that's very wide or something with a lot of force for it in terms of the business they're running. And those individuals are always looking for new rivers and new tributaries for them to be able to flow through. So when you look at someone like Warren Buffett, who will look out for someone who's got great flow in investments and find Benjamin Graham, or if you look at someone like Richard Branson, who when he started Virgin Atlantic, you know, phoned up Freddie Laker and found people who already had flow and knowledge and information and ideas that you could tap into. Flow fundamentally is about how you make sure that you don't just kind of spend all your time digging a river hoping for the water to come, but how you actually start from day one doing something which already has water flowing through it. And there's a number of strategies you can do to do that. You know, we go through those strategies when we have a chance to get together with people. And that's how we've become the largest entrepreneur network all around the world now, because it's the same language of flow, whether you're in China or India or Canada or America or UK. And this language of flow, it pretty much comes down to a basic equation, which is value times leverage, that until you're creating something of value, which is something that people want to actually buy, and then leveraging it, because that's important as well to widen the river. So value creates the gradient of the river, which is the speed of money flow, and leverage creates the width of the river, which is the volume of money flow at that speed. Between those two controls, you can control whatever cash flow you're aiming to generate and how those two work, and fundamentally the substance behind the flow itself. Those two mechanisms are the basis of wealth creation.
Okay, brilliant. And I guess to really develop your ideas and thoughts around flow, was there a time when you've been out of entrepreneurial flow?
Many times. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this is the same for everyone. We learn from our mistakes, and I'm no different from many other entrepreneurs I know who, having gone through many, many, many mistakes, know exactly where not to flow and where to flow to. It's just that because I've spent so much time around entrepreneurs, I've spent more time articulating it, whereas a lot of entrepreneurs I know who are far wealthier than me, they don't spend any time articulating it. They just keep going with it and creating more and more wealth. The fundamental basis to it is understanding that as soon as you find yourself doing something that feels like hard work, as soon as you find yourself doing something where you're doing it for the job or for the money, that is already totally out of flow, because flow is like that magic you see when you watch a great game of football and you can see those guys in the zone and they just collect the right balls at the right time and just flow it on and time slows down. Being out of flow and that block, you can see that happen as well when people all of a sudden are totally off their game, and it just is not simply a matter of not winning the game, it's a matter of having a pretty terrible time while you're doing it as well. And unfortunately, there are many people who currently live a life which is out of flow. And it's not because they choose to, it's because that's what they've learned to do since school and since their jobs, that they kind of figure it's supposed to be like hard work. It absolutely is not. And there's not a single multimillionaire out there who's doing it because it feels like hard work. Because if they've already got the money, they're clearly not doing it for the money. It's got to be because it's something they're really enjoying, that what they're doing. So following your passion, following your purpose, and doing it in ways where you understand the rules of the game, so you're not just giving, but you're giving effectively, is the basis to ensuring that you stay in flow. And in my life, it was in the early years when I had no concept of this at all. I spent a huge amount of my time working really, really hard for myself and losing all my time and my money, and somehow thinking that I was still an entrepreneur, so it was still okay. It wasn't okay at all. And I'm kind of pleased that since then, I have people all around me to remind myself every time I'm going out of flow and bring me back in again.
And are there some easy-to-follow tips for people to know when they're in and out of flow?
Oh, totally. The first thing is the wealth dynamic system you mentioned is the first part, because you could have someone like Donald Trump who says, oh, spend all your time on the phone and you'll be in flow. And then you have someone like Jeff Bezos who says, no, don't even have a phone line. Just make sure they go to your website. Or you'll have someone like Bill Gates who says, as long as I'm creating, I'm loving what I'm doing. Or you'll have someone like Warren Buffett who says, I never create anything. I spend all my time just analyzing other businesses. You know, so it's the first steps have very little to do with what the standard formula is across all disciplines or all different rules of all different sports, but to do with what sport are you playing. You know, you can go to one guy when you want to play sport and says, I want to play ball. And the guy says, okay, great, but to get into flow, make sure that you're picking up the ball and you're not kicking it. And someone else says, okay, great, yeah, let's play, but make sure to get in flow, you're kicking it, you're not picking it up. And they're totally opposite, but that's because one's playing basketball, one's playing football. So it's not about exactly what you need to do, it's about what game you're playing, and as a result of that, what you need to do. So the Wealth Dynamics profile actually goes through 8 different specific games, and how someone like Bill Gates, who plays a creator game, is different from someone like Donald Trump, who plays the dealmaker game, who's different from someone like Warren Buffett, who plays the accumulator game, and so on. And these 8 games, once you understand them, it's brilliant, because you realize very quickly the only way you can get into flow is to make sure the people around you, who also all play different games as well, because they've got different profiles, to ensure they get into their flow as well.
Terrific. And I guess through the work that I do, I see a lot of people playing around with that with an NLP concept called modeling. And the basic premise of the concept is that just if you want success in any arena, just find someone who's successful and model them. And the thing that I really like about the Wealth Dynamics profiling is it offers a more intuitive approach to that model, where you're actually, first of all, looking at your own innate skills and then working out who on the planet has those same characteristics or innate traits and what are they doing to be successful, rather than just picking anyone that you think successful and that you want to replicate their success off.
Yeah, you're so right about that. I know a lot of people who use NLP and get great results, and I know people who use NLP and get terrible results. And that's because when you take the concept of modeling, which is that when you take all the aspects of what someone does and the paradigm they've created and you just model all of those areas, you get the same result. To imagine that that can be replicated in anyone in any way, bound to come to failure, because you're going to end up focusing at your weaknesses. So, for example, let's say you have a 5-foot midget come along and say, I am going to model Michael Jordan and I'm going to become a top NBA player. Well, to begin with, the fact is the person is just not built to be an NBA player. So you say, no, you don't want to do that. Go be a horse jockey instead, or whatever it is. The bottom line is, that we all have got limitations. For you to have someone who's more like a lord or accumulator profile, which are two of the Wealth Dynamics profiles, which are for introverts or people who, to be honest, are much, much better at numbers or much, much better at analysis than they are at networking, and to say to them, oh, you need to model great networkers because you need to have a great network for your business. That's totally the wrong advice, because those people would go out there to networking events and so on thinking that's what they're supposed to do. They'd come away from there not only not having networks, they don't enjoy doing it, but they come away from there thinking that they're even more terrible at what they're doing than they should be, and that doesn't help anybody. And similarly, the same thing when you say to someone, oh, the only way to be successful is you've got to put together a five-year plan, IPO your business, and then be retire a millionaire. And most people have no clue how to get started on that simply because they're not the right profile to make that happen. So same thing again. You end up with people investing a huge amount of time and effort in entrepreneur courses, trading courses, property investment courses, you know, joining network marketing or whatever else comes along that someone says is the easy way to make money. And of course, it's not easy at all if you're not the right profile. And as a result, whatever time and effort you put in, you lose all of it, waste it, and don't even end up at the end simply not making the money. You also end up at the end actually having less confidence in your abilities, which is clearly not the way it is. And when we were younger, before we went to school, every kid had confidence in their abilities to simply be a human being. So why we somehow have to lose that on the quest to wealth is just craziness. And that's one of the most fundamentals about Wealth Dynamics, is that you're using different tools, whether it's modeling or other things, but specifically to be able to play to your own strengths the way that you were born.
Great. Now, there's another thing that you mentioned a little bit earlier on there as well, Roger, and it's not just about finding your own flow, but also encouraging all the people that are in your team or in your business or your suppliers or the people that you work with to find their flow as well and make sure that they're playing in profile. And one of the things that I do when I'm working with people, like I actually do recommend that the first thing that they do is that they do the Wealth Dynamics profiling tool, just so it gives an idea about how we can come together and not just my own skills make the most of mine, but so how can we actually make the most of our skills collectively.
Well, one of the worst mistakes that leaders can make is that they put people into positions where they're not playing on their strengths, they're playing on their weaknesses, which then as a result obviously highlight the weaknesses. And then they judge those people on the weaknesses and say, look, see, you're terrible. And so I'm going to fire you, or I'm going to put you into a smaller position where you're going to feel even less good about yourself. I mean, that's what happens when you don't understand what someone's true strengths are, and you ensure that you put all of their time into those strengths, and you take away everything that's a weakness and put it to someone else who's got that strength. And that is just such a simple, obvious thing to say, but the vast majority of organizations and businesses, they tend to put people into places based on qualifications or knowledge far more than their natural tendencies and traits. And being able to shift that and ensure that you put people in the place where they're really going to hum makes all the difference, because, of course, it means when you show up for work, you're surrounded by people who are just buzzing and loving what they do.
Brilliant. Now, we're going to speak a little bit more later on in the call about your upcoming workshop called Your Life, Your Legacy. One thing I did want to touch on before we actually speak about that later is this whole concept of international business trends. Now, the world is unfolding at an incredible pace, and I think there are lots of entrepreneurs that would literally love the ability to be able to look at the world and how it's unfolding and really stay abreast of the opportunities that are popping up all over the place. And I was just wondering if you had any recommendations on how an entrepreneur could stay up with international business trends.
Yeah, first thing, don't read the newspaper and don't watch the news. And I say that simply because newspapers and news are zero sum. You can only fit 30 minutes of news or, you know, 100 sheets of broadsheet into all everything that the newspaper or the TV want to show you. And so they're always going to go for the sensational stuff. They're always going to go for the stuff that they think is most relevant to those who are in that country. And as a result, you miss the bigger picture. So the misnomer of news is pretty much always not the news. You know, when you hear about wars in the news and you find out that 95% of all countries in the world are not at war, when you hear about a credit crunch and then you find out that the liquidity in the world is at an unprecedented rate, basically it's always going to focus at the things which they think is going to allow people to buy the news or turn on the news. But fundamentally, what's actually happening out there is a very, very different story. We are at the very end, in fact, it's just finished, we're at the very end of something I'd call a historic blip. And what I mean by historic blip is that it was so small, in the future it won't even be registered. For 50,000 years, the East has had dominance in the world economically. Somewhere in the late 1800s, that shifted to the West through the Industrial Revolution. So for the last 150 years, for the first time ever in history, the economic power moved from the East to the West. It just moved back to the East again last year. Last year, the Asia-Pacific region exceeded the European Union in economic output, and it will overtake America within the next year. So fundamentally, we are over that one small little blip that happened where the West were over-producing compared to the East. And as a result of that, as you saw in the Forbes Rich List, you've now got over half of the top richest people in the world who now again come from developing countries as opposed to developed countries. What does this mean for people in places like the UK? It means that it's the greatest opportunity for those who want to take it and who realize this to be able to go out there and make a difference. This happened again just 130, 140 years ago, where all of a sudden in America things took off and all of the wealth that was being created from Europe was happening from America. You know, the likes of people like Andrew Carnegie went off to America and created his entire steel empire with Carnegie Steel, which then became U.S. Steel, and then brought all that money back and built libraries all over the U.K. Well, we've got exactly the same situation now happening with the East.
Great. It's a really interesting piece of information, and I'm sure not many people in the West would actually really be aware of that.
Well, unfortunately, many of us are over 150 years old, so we kind of forget these things.
it definitely, thanks for bringing that to our attention. I'm not sure lots of people would find that very, very interesting.
And by the way, I don't mean in a way to depress people. I really say it because it means that if you're just looking over your backyard and you're wondering why things are looking a bit gloomy.
Yeah. It's interesting as well, like just the whole concept of looking for opportunities. I think people do get into that situation where they're just looking in their own backyard rather than actually having that global perspective. And I suppose it is that, like drawing back to the concept of flow, just looking from a business point of view, what businesses are attracting flow, but also what countries are in flow. And what various economies are growing and flowing all the time. So it's just working out which countries, which regions are sort
Damien,
of
I'm back in
that flow state as well.
I'm in.
Great. Okay. Now, Roger, we had lots of questions that actually came through, and I had a question from Aidan in Turkey. Aidan asked, can anyone be an entrepreneur, or do you need to have special skills or characteristics to be one?
Great question, and it, of course, begs the question, what is an entrepreneur in the first place? When the whole idea of entrepreneurship became part of the media, people saw entrepreneurs almost like pioneers, where they had to be, you know, able to start a business and run the business and get financing and all the rest of this good stuff. And that was a little bit like someone saying, you know, to go to Hollywood, do you need to be able to do everything? And the reality was, you know, so about 80 years ago, the answer was yes, you did have to do everything. In Hollywood, the likes of Walt Disney or Charlie Chaplin were only successful because they had to start their business and they had to know how to create their own characters and create their own scripts, and they needed to know how to like distribute the movies they created and fund the movies and have their own studios. So there's very few people who could actually do it. And then what happened was that a whole system created in Hollywood where you could just be a script writer or just be an actor or just be a director. The same things happen in entrepreneurship today. So 20 years ago, if you were to say, did you have to be born an entrepreneur where you could just do everything? Probably the answer was yes, because you had to be so multi-talented, there was very few people who could do it. Whereas today, an entrepreneur really has a very different meaning. In fact, the word entrepreneur comes from the French verb entreprendre, which means to undertake or to go on a journey of promise. And anyone today, even if you're still in a job, could be an entrepreneur from the point of view that you're going to master your own destiny. You're going to be someone who is not going to simply be on someone else's journey, but you're going to carve your own journey in life, and you're going to live a life extraordinarily so that you end up being able to achieve whatever it is you want to achieve. And that, to me, is what an entrepreneur is. And on that definition, the answer is yes, anyone can be an entrepreneur.
Great. Just really getting back to your core nature and recognize where your talents and skills lie and just work out how you can actually leverage those talents and abilities in the best way possible. Okay, great. We touched on this question a little bit earlier on, but I'm going to ask this one anyway. It's from Margie in the United States. And Margie's question was, is creating a formal written business plan really a necessity?
The answer is, I have yet to meet anyone who has started a business as a result of the business plan. Business plans are useful if you're raising financing. and they're useful as a sales document or as a communication document when you are looking for partners or bringing on new employees and so on. You want to show them something. But anyone who's an entrepreneur knows that a business plan is out of date pretty much the minute it's written, because as anything, it's not about a plan. It's not about a blueprint. It's about fundamentally how you're going to organically grow something which is going to continue to change and shape itself over time. I mean, if someone like Richard Branson was starting with a business plan, I don't think he'd ever would have gone into airlines, and he certainly wouldn't be sending people up to space next year. So it's far more to do with spotting opportunities when they're happening, and it's far more to do with being very, very clear, not so much what your map is, but what your compass is. So the answer is no, you don't have to have a business plan in order to start a business. But what you do need to do is you do need to have a proven concept, which is something that someone is buying at a particular price where the value you're giving is beyond the value that they beyond the price that they're paying. And that's the most fundamental basis of starting any enterprise. And a lot of people forget that. They have beautiful business plans, but they still don't yet have a product or service that many people are being attracted to and driven to their doors because it's just so compelling.
Mm. Right. One of the websites I saw a video clip in you were talking, Roger, about the whole concept of learning in action. And it was like the difference between intellectual knowledge and entrepreneurial knowledge. And the actual phrase that you used was entrepreneurs do in order to know, where intellectuals know in order to do. And that really resonated me with as a concept where the entrepreneur comes up with an idea and immediately puts it into action to start learning about it. And I was just wondering if you can share a little bit more on your philosophies of learning in action.
Yeah, I think that the problem that most of us have today is that there's too much knowledge. I mean, we're just surrounded by knowledge and we keep on thinking we need more when in fact it's all there already. Knowledge actually slows you down. I am flying out to Alexandra Palace where we have this event happening on Monday, and I was just speaking to my PA about the flights to get out there. And it was kind of interesting because we were talking about the decision made about which flight to take. And it's a great analogy of what happens when you have too much knowledge. I mean, it's on one hand, it's like, well, there's one flight that goes at this time, so which one do you want to book on? Well, simple, that one. But the minute you say, well, actually, there's like 50 different flights, and they're all going different ways, and they're all different prices. You want to go in the fastest way? It's like, well, what other way? So, well, if you do it this way, then you spend more time in Bali before you have to leave. And if you do it this way, then you can stop off in Singapore, and you can have those meetings that you wanted to have. And before you know it, you have so many different options that making a decision becomes very, very difficult. The whole point about being an entrepreneur is knowing how to cut through all that knowledge and get back to action. As you say, with the Zen saying, to know and not to do is not yet to know, it's about having the compass which says, regardless of how complicated a map looks, I know which direction I'm heading in, and then head in that direction. And that direction, by the way, for all great entrepreneurs comes down to purpose. It comes down to something much bigger than themselves where they're saying, that is what I want to achieve in life. It's not what I want to get. It's what I want to give. And there's a big give in there somewhere. And the point is that when you're out there and you're saying you want to make $1 million, there's very few people going to help you do that. But when you're out there saying you want to help 1 million people, when you want to deliver 1 million products, you want to revolutionize the market, you're going to find all sorts of people who are willing to support you in that. And in the meantime, of course, you make the money, but so does the market. So it's, again, back to not what you're trying to get, but what you're trying to give. And if you focus around that, you get to action much faster, and knowledge just simply becomes a tool that you use sparingly. Because the less knowledge that you can take, which is selected from everything that's out there, the more effective you're going to be. If you keep on trying to collect more, before you know it, you've got too much, you can't make a decision, and you don't even know what to do when you wake up in the morning.
Right. Yeah, I think the whole concept of purpose and entrepreneurship is really powerful, and in particular with the way that relates to social change and the drivers of social change. And I guess one of my favorite entrepreneurs is Anita Roddick. And I just love the way she created social change through her entrepreneurial endeavours. And really, before she came on the scene, there wasn't a lot of people talking about the dangers of animal testing or the political incorrectness of animal testing. But as soon as Anita Roddick actually got out there and built a business on the back of it and could prove that consumers were actually really interested in that as a social proposition, then all of a sudden all the other big companies started paying attention. And I was just wondering, Roger, if you could share what your thoughts are on the entrepreneur and their role in social change in the world.
Yeah. I mean, Anita just passed away last year, and she was probably one of the best-known entrepreneur or social entrepreneurs who really wore her cause on her sleeve. A lot of people don't know that one of the first causes she got involved in, which was a youth cause in the UK, was a partnership between her and a couple of other entrepreneurs, including Richard Branson, and that was in the late 1980s. And that just wasn't that public at the time because entrepreneurs at that time didn't see that wearing their cause on their sleeve would benefit them in any way. In fact, if anything, because at that point there was a huge focus in corporations because the stock market was going from, Dow went from like a couple of thousand up to 10,000 and so on. The focus on shareholder value meant that anything to say that you were giving money to other causes was frowned upon. Well, that has all shifted in the last 5 years, as we know. And so we have now very, very public declarations by the likes of Richard Branson and, of course, people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. They all had the causes before. It's not like they suddenly decided they were going to support them. The difference now is that they see that the consumers out there are enlightened enough, and that's the you and me in the world, are enlightened enough that we basically are now willing to not just put our money at where we're going to get things cheapest or where we're going to get things that help our lifestyle the most, but where we're actually going to make the biggest difference as well. So as a result of that, you've now got pretty much all the top entrepreneurs in the world who are quite openly saying, these are the causes I support, and here's how they relate to my business as well. And it is so much easier when you now have a business with a cause related to it to generate income than it is if you don't. And this is, I think, the trend that we're going into. You know, I've met trainers who run events, and at the beginning of the events, they say, look, I'm going to tell you right now that 10% of all the money that's being generated from this event is going towards this course I believe in, and they get standing ovations. They get people who say, I'm going to bring my friends into this. And I have others who are doing nothing at all, and they just don't get as much business. I see now businesses around the world who are producing anything from whether it is hospitality because they've got hotels that they're giving money towards the charities they believe in, or whether it is the credit cards they've got where they're giving money, a percentage for anyone who's using the service. And we see this all the time. In fact, as I'm speaking to you, of all things, I have my children here in the room, and they are watching American Idol, as you would expect to watch. But it is an entire program of American Idol, which is on giving, where the entire thing is about giving back. And the leverage that people who know how to create wealth can now leverage in terms of giving back is just absolutely phenomenal, which is why we're seeing that the entrepreneurs of the world are actually doing more in effective giving than even the governments of the world today.
Yeah, I think that's powerful. And I think for people that are literally sitting back waiting for the governments to create social change, I think that's really inspiring because like the entrepreneurs are really leading the way in terms of what's possible for our development as a humankind. So that's a really great answer. Thanks for that, Roger.
To get my high horse for a second, but basically right now that I meet two different types of people in general. I meet the type who say, oh, education system is broken, the health system is broken, the government is broken. I hear these kind of things. And I have a whole different group that I meet up with and spend an awful lot more time with who say we are currently transforming the education system. We are transforming the health system. We are transforming the way that we actually meet up as communities and the way that we actually generate change. And the point is, by the time the people who are there complaining about the government or complaining about the health system or education system or so on realizes that it's all transformed, the ones who are transforming it are the ones who not only have transformed it but made a huge amount of profit in the process of transforming it because they've added so much value in that everyone in those different systems are more than happy to pay that. And as a result, we are going to end up with a generation coming, which is going to be in a far better place as a result of those entrepreneurs who are stepping up today. And that's more than just these systems. We're talking about the environment. We're talking about the way that poverty is being alleviated. We're talking about the way that smart ideas are coming in to be able to actually change the way that we're even living for the time we're living on this planet and the way that we're treating those who are old, those who are infirm, those who are young, those who are disabled. When you can take any aspect of someone somewhere who is looking for a smarter, sharper way to live, you have got entrepreneurs in those fields currently, and they already are working overtime to be able to make change. When you have someone like Muhammad Yunus, who's an entrepreneur from microfinancing in Bangladesh, win the Nobel Peace Prize, or when I was meeting up with the international editor of Fortune magazine in New York a couple of months ago, and I was talking about social entrepreneurs, and he asked me a question. He said, when you talk about social entrepreneurs, do you think there's any difference between social entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs? And I said straight up at that point, sitting across the table from him, I said, no, they're exactly the same. And he goes, bang on. You know, an entrepreneur today cannot help but be a social entrepreneur because if entrepreneurs are there focused on change, there is no change other than social change.
That's a very powerful answer. Thanks for that, Roger. Now, just go back to a question from Sadiqa in South Africa. And Sadiqa asks, how do you maintain consistency in mind and action with everything that you do towards your entrepreneurial goal? How do you remain persistent in the face of adversity and not let doubts get the better of you? So how do you work on that emotional game as well, Roger?
Yeah, great question. Really, the answer is, in the Your Life, Your Legacy book, there's a whole section which is on rhythm and the rhythm of wealth. In all my businesses, I have meetings once a week when I will, once a meeting, meeting with the right people who are focused at the results we're trying to get. And I'll invite advisors or invite the right people in who've got the right mindset for that as well. So, number one, you need to have a time when you're meeting with the people who believe in what you do. And it's got to be regular. And you've got to just keep to that and keep accountable to it. Secondly, you've got to be accountable to yourself. And that doesn't mean every single day, because we all have good times and bad times and high moments and low moments. So it's about just going with the waves, but knowing that there's a time every day and there's a time every week when you're checking in with yourself and when you're writing in your journal or you're making notes and comparing against the goals that you set for yourself, where you can again just keep realigning that compass again and again and again. You know, as they say, when the Apollo space rocket went to the moon, it was actually on course about 5% of the time. The other 95% of the time, it was heading in the wrong direction, but they kept on just adjusting, 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 adjusting. And so don't ever think that we're perfect as human beings and we're always going to be pointing at our goals. We're not. We're going to be set off course probably 100 times a day. But what is important is to make sure that you have set predetermined meeting points and points which allow you to create a rhythm to your wealth so that every time you get blown off course, you know that at the end of the week on that Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning, you're meeting up again to just realign yourself and set off for the week ahead. And for most people, because they're so busy running around, they think, I haven't got time to do that. Give yourself the space to do that, and you'll be blown away by how quickly you can realign and re-energize yourself for the coming week as well.
Excellent. That's great. Now, another concept I wanted to explore with you, Roger, is the whole concept of luck. And most people look at a lot of entrepreneurs and think, you know, there's got to be a lot of luck in the success that they've created. And I was just wondering if you could actually share your perspective on luck and the role it plays in the success of the entrepreneur.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, luck. Carl Jung talks about synchronicity, which is about this like magic that happens when everything gets attracted to us. And every time that I have a chance to spend with some of the entrepreneurs in our network, I just feel so privileged because I just get to see magic firsthand. And luck is something which is the only thing. Luck is that one thing where all of a sudden you find yourself, running a music business and all of a sudden you're in the aeroplane business and now you've got Virgin Atlantic flying from London to New York. And luck is when your whole business is just collapsing all around you and you're just trying to do your best to keep your market share in the PC market with something which doesn't even run with Microsoft, and the next minute you've come up with something called iTunes and then iPod and then iPhone. And that's luck. It's basically something where all of a sudden out of nowhere through your perseverance, something magical shows up. But it's not something which you have to pray for or hope for. It's something you create. And in the same way that a great football player can create the openings in a game, a great entrepreneur can create luck in every moment. And the way we do it is by breaking luck into four elements, L-U-C-K, and L stands for location, always putting yourself in new locations. And I would say specifically for anyone listening, your location next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is going to be at Alexandra Palace, because that's where I'm going to be. And the first thing is location, because just put yourself in somewhere new, you are going to find immediately new opportunities coming your way, right? You put yourself in the right point of the pitch, then you're going to end up getting the right ball. And the second thing, understanding, is to realize that the whole reason you're currently running what you're doing and doing what you're doing is probably not for the reason you think. It's probably not for that paycheck next month, or it's probably not for that new product you think you're going to produce, but it's because of something much, much bigger, that there's someone somewhere on the other side of the world who would see far more value in what you're doing and how you're doing it, and they've got far superior products and services they'd be willing to give to you to sell on in your local community than you currently have. But if you don't show up in the right place, right time, with an understanding that, in fact, anything can show up anywhere, which could be 100 times the size of what you're doing right now, then you're going to miss that opportunity. And the C stands for connections, which is just making sure you're making connections to the right place, because too many people are trying to play the football game on their own and wondering why no one's kicking them a ball because they don't have a team. So that's where Wealth Dynamics comes in, and just making sure you've got connections of the right type where you can pass the ball on to them, they can pass it to you, and as a result, you get balls constantly. And the final one, knowledge, is just know how to kick that ball when it comes your way so that as a result, you know, you're not sitting in the cockpit of a plane hoping you can fly, having your friends and relatives saying you can fly, and every time you try and take off, you crash. is not about whether or not you have the willpower to do it. It's whether or not you actually even understand that flight deck right in front of you, right? Whether you really understand how you can even fly this plane. And for too many people, we never learned that at school. We've never gone the mile with the mentors who can show us how to fly. And as a result, every time we try and take off, we do crash. And that clearly is not a very nice, enjoyable, or even a time-efficient way for us to get to our wealth. So LUCK, there's a way that if we continue to every day focus at what's my location, what's my understanding of why I'm here, how many connections am I growing right now, which is the right kind, and what's my knowledge, and if I keep building those every single day, you can't help but getting luckier. You get better opportunities coming your way, and the minute you stop that and you just get busy working, then before you know it, you'll find that every year goes by and you're no luckier this year than you were last year.
Yeah, I like that. You can actually practice getting luckier. I think that's going to be quite a refreshing concept for lots of people on the call. Now, before I actually go on and have a chat about your life, your legacy, there was a question that did come through the webcast, which I thought was quite interesting and probably a question that lots of people have asked themselves. And it has to do with the wealth dynamics profile. And it's come from Jackie, who's in London. And Jackie was just wondering, is it a good idea to do your wealth profile or wealth dynamics profile more than once, i.e. does it change over time when you've picked up new skills and further developed yourself?
Ah, okay. Good point. The wealth profile is actually a test that you can do at wealthdynamics.org. And if you go there and you do that test, in fact, I mean, it costs like $100 to do it, but those coming for the event actually get that as part of the package. The Wealth Dynamics profile, you answer the questions, and fundamentally it then comes up a graph which shows you which of those eight you're most suitable for. So there's two things, really. One is, what is your profile, which fundamentally means which one are you best suited for? And the questionnaire is the one that will give that to you. Then there's the second thing, which is, now that you know your profile, then do you know the rules of that game? Are you practicing that game? Are you playing that game? So, for example, Michael Jordan, who in America became pretty famous in the 1980s as a basketball player. His profile was clearly, if he was doing it in sports, a basketball player, and that was what he was best suited for. But he got so excited about the whole idea of him getting to the top of the NBA, he then moved to baseball, and he thought, maybe I could actually do baseball instead. So then he went off to baseball, and he tried for a couple of years. Didn't work out, even though he actually got into major leagues, which was not bad if you're wanting to play baseball. That was mainly because of his celebrity. He wasn't that great at it. He didn't earn that much money from it. He lost all his endorsements. And he had a big decision to make at that point, which is, okay, do I keep on trying to persevere in this new way, or should I go back to my original way? And when he went back to basketball, he then became the most famous player and the most endorsed and the richest player ever in NBA history. And the biggest difference the second time around was not just that he became better. The most important thing is he became more certain. He became more certain he should be doing that and nothing else. So what I'd suggest is, if someone's done the profile once and they go, oh, should I do it again? Oh, I'll do it again. Oh, maybe I'll be something else. Fundamentally, what you're actually doing is just wasting your time, because to know not to do is not yet to know. Do it once, know what your profile is, go with that profile and play that game. If you decide that you don't want to play that game, you want to play a different game, like you say, oh, look, I'm creator, but I could be star. Maybe go to star game and go like more like Oprah Winfrey or Bono. That's what I want to do, and get on stage and make it happen, instead of being like Richard Branson or Bill Gates as a creator. If that's what you choose to do, go do that. But the most important thing is get on a game, play it, because the time it takes to build the team, to have the strategies, to understand where you should be on the pitch, how you should understand the rules, that takes time. And every day that you are wasting that time is another day wasted towards your wealth.
Great. That's great advice.
One thing that a lot of people miss is, even though most people would think that they're in their lifetime, and probably some people in this call already doing this, but in their lifetime they'll be making, you know, £1 million a year. When you actually work that £1 million a year out over, say, 50 weeks, that's £20,000 a week, that every single week that you're going by not taking the actions to take yourself to a millionaire, every single week that goes by, you're just throwing another £20,000 down the toilet. And there are a lot of people, when they finally get to that point, they go, I cannot believe I didn't start earlier. And those people who are not yet earning that kind of money, who are saying, yeah, I think I'll try to do something next week or next week after, without realizing what they're actually doing in their lifetime is just throwing another week away where they could have easily been earning £20,000, which they would be doing when they get there, but because they're delaying their path to get there by another week, it just costs them another £20,000, plus it costs them that week of time as well. So if there's one thing, it's understanding that wealth is not about how you invest your money, it's about how you invest your time, and every week that goes by is just another week wasted.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, with your life, your legacy, it's coming up here in London on the 14th to the 16th of April. and I've booked my ticket. I'm very excited about getting along to the event. But one thing I wanted to know, Roger, was why did you actually want to, what inspired you actually to create this event, Your Life, Your Legacy?
Well, you know, the frank answer to that is I didn't. We now have XL, which is our entrepreneur network, in 50 different cities around the world, and London is one of them. And in every single city, we have teams who are entrepreneurs, just brilliant entrepreneurs, who are meeting up regularly and who are coming up with different ideas and different events to be able to spread the message for those who are becoming entrepreneurs, and there's more and more every day. So it just so happened that the London team said, let's do this event at Alexandra Palace. Let's get 2,000 people along. Let's get Roger down, and let's basically have an event where we can explain in the UK at a really critical time when there's this wealth that's shifting, when there's people who are concerned about the economy. Let's have a moment where we can actually bring perspective of what's actually going on and where the real opportunities are. So they called me up and said, okay, Roger, are you free to do this event? We'll bring you over, and we'll basically make sure that we fill up that room, and as a result, we can get as many people as possible in the UK understanding what these top 10 trends are happening around the world, how people can use their profile to be able to get to their wealth so that the UK can really benefit from all of the incredible things that are going on worldwide right now. And it's just such a fantastic opportunity for me to be able to come and share this to a large audience. And so, of course, my answer was yes. And this was a conversation we had sometime last year. And as a result, now I'm coming out. So, again, just as luck happens, a new opportunity shows up and everyone sees a way for the stars to align and make it happen. And therefore, I'll see you on the Monday, and I'm sure we'll have a great time together.
Brilliant. Now, there are a lot of people on the call that probably are thinking about the whole process of accelerating their performance. And as an entrepreneur, I was just wondering, how will an investment of 2.5 days in a room full of like-minded people with you sharing a lot of concepts and ideas and strategies and the top trends, how is that actually going to benefit your typical entrepreneur?
I don't think anyone on this call would dispute the fact that there is someone who is probably not as smart as them, probably not as hardworking as them, probably not as talented as them, and probably have a business which is already doing anywhere from 2 to 10 to 100 times the size of them, right? So as a result of us knowing that, then the question is, well, how did that happen, or what's that all about, or why is it they've actually achieved that? Or the other question could be, well, how do I get from the size I'm at to the size they're at right now? So when you have got that number of people together, there will be people who are there who will already be of huge resource to others who are looking for smarter ways to be able to move forward. And it's not just people in the room as well. We have people flying from around the world, and there are some parts of the event where I actually, on the stage, pick up the phone and call Japan, call China, call India, call Australia, call our network around the world and say, right, I've got someone here who's got this business issue or looking for this business opportunity. What can you do? And straight away, you're going to see magic happen. Straight away, you're going to see new businesses formed, partnerships being created, and people realizing how quickly and swiftly they can shift themselves from their current paradigm to a new one where there's different cash flow, where there's different value creation, and it's simply a matter of actually taking yourself out of your current business every day or out of even your job and whatever business ideas you have and seeing some very simple, swift, smart ways to move forward. And in my experience, every time I put the right number of days with the right number of people, it's not about the value of the money of the course or the couple of days of time. It's an acceleration of years when you actually have that kind of melting pot of talent in one place.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Excellent. Now, we're coming up to the hour, Roger, and I just wanted to just finish on a final question. And I was just wondering why you thought that now is the most exciting time ever to be an entrepreneur.
There's really two reasons for it, and the first is if people think back 10 years, most of your friends were in jobs, whereas today most of our friends are now entrepreneurs or starting their own business. So there is a sea change going on right now, and it's occurring at the same time as two other sea changes. There is some trends we're going to go through. Within 15 years, 60% of the workforce are going to be robots. Now, that's a pretty frightening thought when you think about it. Within 15 years, that's going to happen. And this is not something which I'm just making up. This is something which the futurists talk about. This is something which, if you actually look at the smartest minds in the smartest universities, that they already see coming. And so when we look at the way that some of us are quite complacent about our future, because 15 years isn't that long ago, long in the future, and others of us are really making sure that we're in the forefront of it. There is a huge, huge opportunity for us to step into a wave that's currently happening where we're going away from basically just repetitive labor and we're getting into smart, creative innovation in the way that we are really using what it means to be human to be able to create some true magic on this planet. And we are, for the first time ever in the last 50,000 years, able to turn on our computers and know what's going on the other side of the world.
Brilliant. I think the exciting thing about the world we're living, just it is a lot of just the internet has just opened up the minds of people globally, and yeah, just to reach out and make those connections with different people around the world, to share ideas, to share experiences, to share knowledge, and find ways and means of actually improving the world that we live in. I think we are just living in phenomenal times. And yeah, I guess I'm really looking forward to seeing you in action down at Alexandra Palace next week, Roger. And I'm looking forward to meeting a whole range of different entrepreneurs there over the course of the few days and sharing ideas and resources. And yeah, just really continuing on that entrepreneurial dream. So Roger, I'd just like to take this opportunity to say thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and experience this afternoon on this call, and I look forward to catching up with you next week in London. Okay, I think Roger's actually just been disconnected from the phone. But I'm sure that Roger wishes you all well as well. So thanks everyone for participating, and I'll talk to you very soon.